right? That's the kind of desperation that has to carry an individual from 1 to 5, really, I mean, to get through all of this work, right? There's a lot to examine and a lot to go over to get to the point where Ted's talking about now. And and with this, what we're really trying to get to in this process is not relief, but release.
Yes.
Right? Spiritual release. There's a huge difference between relief and release, right? If I'm in prison, right, I'm in that 6x9 cell, and someone sends me a package, right, that's relief, right? The food sucks, right? I got some goods to trade now, right? But that relief is a whole lot different from when I'm heading to the gate and they're about to release me. Right? Big difference between relief and release. And what's promised here is release. Right? But you got to have that desperation, right? And you got to be clear on a lot of things, right? So, you know, I don't know if that helped you, Josh, but there's a lot of things to get into to seek these answers that I've only found possible through this process, you know, and doing those things, right, staying desperate through those first months of getting through this work and being uncomfortable as hell, right? It don't feel good to look at all this stuff and see how fucked up I am, right? It's not comfortable. But if I drink again, you know what I mean? That was hell, right? That was real hell. That was worse because the drink don't work no more. It doesn't take away all that stuff that it used to take away. You know, you gotta really stay diligent and hold on to that desperation in the beginning before you're going to start really feeling God's power. At least that's my experience.
After you did your 4-step and 5th step and shared that with your sponsor, did that take away the guilt that obviously somebody might have after doing some, you know, bad things, you know?
Yeah, well, yes, and I will say that, you know, especially looking at it from the perspective of I couldn't behave any differently on my own power. I wasn't intentionally going out and trying to do this. Now, it doesn't justify my behavior, but it was an eye-opener to see that, because I did feel really bad about the stuff that I had done. Because I created a lot of harm in inventory.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The same thing we're talking about right now. What I'm talking about.
And so...
So there was a sense of relief after...
So there was a sense of release. Yeah. Because I got free of it, right? But I needed to go back and make this right with the people that I had harmed, for sure. Yeah, you know, because I did a lot of damage. And what I found out in the inventory is I'm not a sociopath, because I do have a lot of human emotion about what I had done. And I still needed to go balance the books where the harm was created. And we'll get into that, Cynthia. We'll tackle that in the next...
So was that actually more liberating than step 5 is the making amends process?
Yeah. So we'll get there. It actually is. To me, there's nothing like going out in the men's. I'm huddled up with my sponsor in the 5th step, but now I'm going out to the people that I did damage to in the men's process. And when I see them get free, there's nothing like that.
Is there a time frame in doing that?
There's not a time frame. It's just how you and your sponsor are moving through the step process. So getting back to what we were talking about, between the drawing the line between 6 and 7. 6 is about me seeing what I'm still clinging to, right, in my own behavior, seeing how I behaved on my own power, right? 7 is now about a commitment to the relationship that I'm making with God. In step 3, it was about a decision. Now in step 7, I'm ready to make this commitment. The first 2 words in the 7th step is when ready. Well, what does when ready mean? When ready means when I become entirely ready to turn to God for help with all the things that I've seen in the first 6 steps. Okay? All the way back from step one, looking at the physical craving. Do I find that objectionable? Right? The things that I did while from the physical craving, all of the stuff that I, the consequences of my drinking, do I find that completely objectionable? Do I find it that I have a mental insanity that takes me back to alcohol, the obsession of the mind? Do I find that completely objectionable about myself? And with the unmanageability of my spirit, do I find this inner disturbance, that restless, irritable, and discontentment that Rob was talking about earlier, do I find that completely objectionable? And then moving into the second step, seeing my agnosticism and my agnostic lifestyle and the results of an agnostic lifestyle, do I find that completely objectionable? And then in step three, seeing my life run on self-will and seeing that playing God doesn't work, right? And like I was sharing earlier, I need a God in my life just not to play God. Right? I find that completely objectionable to me. And then seeing my life run on self-will in the inventory. Right? I find all of that done objectionable. But I am now ready to turn to God for help with it. If I think there's still value in hanging on to this stuff, I'm going to continue to cling to it with a death grip. Because that's just the way I am. It's like clothes that I have in my closet. Right? I'll keep the same clothes there for a long, long time and only wear about one-third of my wardrobe. The other two-thirds just sits there and gets in the way. Right? Until I see that this closet is cluttered. Now, that's not really a big deal when it's in your closet, but what if you're carrying around a bunch of crap in your head? Right? Or inside of you. And people are going, hey, I don't really like when you do A plus B equals C, right? I don't like it when you're doing that. Until you see the truth about it and you find it objectionable, you will not turn to God for help with it. And that's really what the seven-step prayer is all about, where it says, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, not some of me. Take away the alcohol, but here, I'll keep the promiscuous relationships and the gambling and all this other stuff. Right? That's not what it says. It says, you should have all of me, the good and bad. Right? And then it talks about, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. So the reason why I'm saying this prayer isn't so I could have this awesome, you know, feel-good life, but so I could be useful. And as a result of becoming useful, my life automatically, by default, gets better. Okay? But the goal going into this isn't for some selfish reason. It's because I need to be useful. Get the defects that are blocking me off from God so I can go out and be and take my awakened spirit out into the world to be of maximum service. That's what this really is all about. Okay? But it's about a commitment here. You know, there's a difference between a commitment and then a wholehearted commitment. You can't have one toe in the old life and one toe in the new life and think that this is going to work out. You better be either all in or all out. Step three was about a decision. Step seven is about a commitment to this relationship. That I'm going to live a life with power from now on, going forward. And it makes sense because now we're going to transition into amends. And if I ain't gotten free of the defects, there's no business of me going out to make amends for stuff that I might turn around and continue to do. So that's why these steps are in order. The sequential part of the 12 steps is beautiful. It's been divinely inspired and it's been put into sequence in the perfect way. And if it isn't done properly, the chances of you going out and making amends is probably going to be detrimental to you. Because there's nothing worse than going and making amends and then doing it all over again. That's like spitting in somebody's face. So 6 and 7 are crucial to going forward in the rest of the process. Sorry, yeah. Thank you. Are we done? Let's let Cynthia come up and do it. Thank you.
I'm going to stand up like all the other women did. We're like, I want to talk to the room here. the guys are sitting down, you know, except for Nick. Nick's like, yeah. So it is the afternoon, and I'm old, so I might not make a lot of sense. So if you've got a big book, go to 76, because that's what I'm going to be talking about, and that's what Teddy and them were talking about. You know, and again, we've looked at what a mess my life was running on self-will. Okay? Those were my best efforts. Got me married 3 times. I mean, you know, it just, I destroyed my children's lives, my life. You know, I was threatening to kill people. I mean, it was just a real mess. And it was all because nobody else was doing what I wanted them to do, right? Nobody. There were people on the freeway that I wanted to kill because they were in the left lane. I flipped the little old lady off one time because she was in the left lane. And that's the kind of stuff that I felt compelled to do because I was so restless, irritable, and discontented. Well, can I find that little old lady and make amends to her? Probably not. You know, you guys, you've made a list in your fifth step. You know, you've kind of gone over this stuff with your sponsor, and your sponsor is going to help you see where, yeah, you don't need to be making amends for that. Or do you see how you may need to make amends for this other stuff that you didn't see? And that's what's exciting about the fifth step, is because, and I get excited when I get to do a fifth step now. The first time, no. Now, every time I do a fifth step, I get excited because I'm going to get freer. I'm going to see delusions that I can't see. You know, there's an example in the big book where Bill, or, you know, while they're doing the inventory, and it's like, well, I'm resentful at her because she's crazy. She told my wife about my mistress. And he's going, well, that's a completely justified resentment. And it's like, yeah, that's cuckoo. And I have been just as cuckoo. You know, my ex-husband took from me. He locked me out of the house. He took me all the money. Well, what was I doing? I married him. What was I doing to deserve that? Right? But I was getting something out of being a victim. You know? And that's what I had to ask God to take from me. All right. I have, yeah. I'm sorry, what?
It's only that you wanted back what the devil took from you. That's all it was.
Okay, I'll have to think about that. Yeah, I'll have to chew on that. Okay, so, you know, I began to realize that not only was I powerless over my physical craving and my mental obsession for drugs and alcohol and food, but I was powerless over those defects. And I was powerless over other people. And I'm powerless in every area of my life. Someone asked me a question the other night after the meeting, and I knee-jerked lied. It didn't intend to be a lie. I was trying to be evasive. But I called her on the way home, and I texted her on the way home, and I'm like, you know what? I wasn't honest with you about that, because I was afraid I would look bad if you knew the real truth. And I don't want to look bad. You know, I mean, you guys did a beautiful job talking about fear and what that stems from. Well, what happens if people think I'm not a good sponsor? Well, they're not going to like me, and I'm going to be alone, and then I'm going to be in emotional pain, and then I'm going to want to drink and use. And then what if God is not there? What if that's a lie? That reminds me. There was another thing. We talked about terms for higher powers. Yes, I'm jumping around, I know. So page 46. You'll notice in the big book as you go through it that when it's talking about our Creator, the ultimate higher power, all these terms are capitalized. So at the top of 46, when it talks about power, it's a capital P. It's the power, okay? Go down a little bit further, it says supreme being. That's the power, okay? These are all different terms for power, okay? What I was taught to do was to write down all these terms. God, supreme being, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, realm of the spirit. There's Zara in there somewhere. Zara of the universe. Zara of the heavens. You know, I thought of every single term of a higher power that I could think of and everything that was in the book. And I sat in prayer and meditation. And I just very quickly went through each one. What does it mean to me when I hear the word God? Ooh, big. What does it mean to me when I hear the word creator? Well, whoever made me and knows what's going on, knows what I need. Zara, the universe, ooh, he's in charge. I had a sponsee that couldn't swallow the word God. So her higher power was higher power guy. It works. I have a friend that calls her source, because that's her source of power. So whatever you need to do, and you can have a relationship with, because you've got to have a relationship with this power, because we're talking about steps 8 and 9. We're talking about going out and making amends to people. I have hidden in shame because I've been a tornado in people's lives, right? There's a place in the book that talks about, let's see, where is it? You know, we're like the farmer who comes up out of the cellar after the tornadoes hit and says, I don't see any problems, the winds quit a blowing, you know. And I thought if I just quit using life, you guys should be happy. That should be enough for you. I didn't realize what a tornado I was in other people's lives. And I just avoided that. I just avoided these people, right? And I was like one of those armchair step people. It's like, okay, yeah, my life's unmanned. I am alcohol. And yeah, tangibly, yeah. Step 4, yeah, I know what I did, blah, blah. Step 5, oh, hell no. I'm not doing it. I am not going to tell somebody else what I have done. Because there's no... Actually, you, my ego was so big, I thought... I've done so much worse than other people, I can't say this out loud. Guess what? I'm average. The stuff that I did is no different than what some of you all did. It's no different. I'm not special like I thought I was. You know? Well, now I got to go out to these people and face them and tell them what I know I've done. And I'll tell you, when I first started doing the work this way, I had a situation where I was renting a house, okay? And there was this couple that was coming to our home group, and they were wanting to rent a house. Well, I was in the delusion that if they didn't pay the rent, these guys that were in my home group were going to go beat them up or something. You know, I mean, there's no way these guys are going to not pay their rent. Right? Well, guess what? They didn't pay the rent. I had not researched. I had never rented a house before to someone. I had not done my research. You know, I'm an old cowgirl, and I thought, they don't pay the rent. You go in there, get their shit, put it out in the alley, light it on fire, change the locks, we're done. Right? State of California doesn't cotton to that. So, I'm in this work, right? And I got all these resentments, and I'm just full of hate, and da-da-da, you know. And I've got my fifth step finally written out, and I'm going to do my fifth step. I'm driving to my sponsor's house. And this little tiny minor decision like God's not in everything. Should I stop at this Starbucks or that Starbucks? I need to treat myself. Well, I made the decision to stop at the one downtown, right? And who do I see sitting at the table in front of Starbucks? But my renter. And he ducked his head and I went, "Well, well, well, who do we have here today?" I had a gun on hold. I was in the process of buying a gun. I told him I was going to kill him and his crazy-ass wife. This guy is on prison material. I mean, he's tatted up. He's, you know. And I'm this little white class, middle class housewife going, "I'll fuck you up, man." And I'm yelling in downtown Visalia on a Sunday morning. And he's, "I'm going to call the cops." Go ahead, who are they going to believe, you or me? I was going to use every resource I had to get him in trouble, right? So finally he got away from me. And all the people in Starbucks are like, "Man, 5150. So I drive to my sponsor's house and she's like, "You did what? What about God? Well, yeah, God. He's not doing it my way. This ain't coming out the way I want it to work out. F God." Because I was large and in charge and I was going to do it my way, right? So fast forward. Now I'm on steps 8 and 9. First, I have to tell you one other thing that I did. Okay, there was a situation with the house where a repairman had to come in. I told the tenants they were had to come in. They weren't there. I was there by myself in their home, my home, that they weren't paying rent on. And I had to use the bathroom. And I was in this process enough to know I was going to have to make amends for whatever I did. I thought, well, if I pee in her shampoo, surely that would hurt her more, and I won't have to make amends for it. If I use her toothbrush to scrub my butt, that would hurt her more, so surely I won't have to make amends for that, right? So yes, I did those things. So now it was brought to my attention the harm that I had done to them. This was a pattern for them. They would move into a house, not pay the rent, and get evicted. I enabled them to do that another time because I did not do the due diligence to see what their rent record was. I caused that problem. I did that. I didn't do the research. Those guys at my home group didn't have... that was a delusion that came out in my four-step. It's just like, really? You thought, no, that's not the way that works, you know. I lost my train of thought. See, that's what happens when you're old. Okay. So I'm on my, I got to go make amends to this guy, right? Because I can't tell her what I've done because that would injure her more. I tell somebody you scrubbed your butt with her toothbrush. So I called him, and we had been through the eviction process and court, and they were out and on and on. And he was pretty, he had a lot of anxiety about, given the last time we were together. He had some anxiety about meeting me because I said, "Let's meet at Starbucks. Let's just go back to the scene of the crime, right?" Okay. Well, by then he was drinking. Okay. He was back on the street and he was in his cups and it was not lovely. And I told him that I was aware of this harm, that I had enabled them to continue a destructive pattern in their life, that I was wrong to threaten him and his crazy ass wife, and you know, all the harms that I was aware of and my sponsor had helped me see. And I bought him a coffee, and he accepted my amends, and that was the end of it, you know. But he knows that this process works, and I pray that he comes back alive. I saw his wife. And I'm like, okay, do I have any residual resentment? And I'm like, no, I don't. But she had a lot of feelings, and I could tell. And I thought, that's really sad, you know, that she is so controlled by my presence. And that's what I realized, is all these people that I had resentments against had power over me. Because if I saw that guy, I turned into the freaking Incredible Hulk, right? That's not being controlled and directed by my creator. I'm being controlled and directed by Teddy when he cuts me off at the coffee shop or whatever, you know? So I'm making other people my God. Now, there's a big difference between making a list in eight and going out and making the amends. And the difference is you're not in nine until you're knocking at the door.
That's right.
You know? And the beautiful thing about... I forgot to start my timer, so give me a...
You got about 5 minutes.
Okay. In this book, it tells us how to make amends. Well, it doesn't mention toothbrushes. But it tells us how to make amends for every single thing. Infidelity. You know? Business. It even tells us how to make amends to dead people. Okay? I make a card. There are instructions in here, and we can go into that at another time. But I go to the cemetery, and I sit and I read my amends. And I ask them, is there anything I'm not aware of? God answers me back. That is a powerful exercise in making your amends. I had never done anything to my daughter-in-law that I knew of. So I'm making amends to my son, and I was prompted to ask, does your wife have any... Ooh, you're going to have to ask her. And I'm like, oh, shit, what did I do to her? And she goes, you know, you upset my husband. And that upset me. Okay. I wasn't aware that I had hurt her. And so many times, I wasn't aware that I was hurting other people. I just didn't see it. And the beautiful thing about the realization that we talked about in the fourth step is I can look at other people like my renter and go, when have I ever ripped somebody off? When have I not paid back what I was supposed to pay it back? I'm as sick as they are. You know, I want to be forgiven. So that's when the book talks about... these people being sick and praying for them. And I thought, I don't care if they're sick. They just need to not stop doing, you know, I need to stop doing stuff. Like driving in the left lane when I need to go faster. Or whatever. I don't care if they're sick. But when I look at how sick I have been, okay. Now I can... I'm okay. The burn comes out of it. There's something that this book does beautifully, and you know, we talked about it being divinely inspired. And if this book has been divinely inspired, then the answers have been divinely inspired. I don't know about you, but I see myself all through this book. I see the self-centeredness. I see the selfishness. I see all of that. And the answers are here. And it's a sacred journey. Am I going to live on a spiritual basis or die an alcoholic death? Believe me, God was the last thing I was looking for. The last house on the block. I didn't want nothing to do with God. But I could accept a higher power. And it has grown from that. Another thing that this book does is it gives us promises. And as I was going through this book and my sponsor would tell me, you know, these are the promises, and I would go, you know what, it might work for you, but I don't know if it's going to work for me. And by God, if these promises don't come true, you're in trouble. Because I'm not going to go through all this inventory and all this amends and all this other crap and not have it work. See, I thought I was so special. I thought I was different than others. Well, I'm different from moderate drinkers, I'll tell you that. But I'm not different than any other alcoholics. Okay? So on 84, it talks about the things that we are promised if we're diligent in this work. And again, like Nick said, you know, you're not going to, if you haven't even done step one, it's really hard to conceive going out and making amends to people. But just trust that as you take each baby step and each instruction and everything you're told to do, that when you finally get there, you're going to have the power behind you to do it. Did I think I had the power to make amends to that guy when I was just doing my fourth step? I thought, I'll kill him first. But by the time I got to nine, I was willing. Okay. So, on the bottom of 83, it says, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, I'm going to be amazed before I'm halfway through. See, I thought halfway through was like step six. That's halfway, right? 6 to 12? No, halfway through my amends. Okay. I'm going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I'm not going to be controlled by other people anymore. I will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. No matter how bad it's been, no matter how far down the scale I've gone, I will see how my experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in my fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. I guarantee you. I remember Teddy telling me, I guarantee you if you do this work all the way through, your life will be different. And I thought, who's this guy think he is? It's different. It's different. It's like nothing I've ever experienced in my life. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave me. I will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. I will suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. Are these extravagant promises? Is this all bullshit? I think that you've witnessed enough today to see that it's not. These promises are coming true in all these people. They're coming true. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will always materialize. Always. Not sometimes, not part of the time, not you, because you're not, you're worse of the worst. Always materialize if we work for them. The book says 5 times, faith without works is dead. I think they want us to know that we've got to get to work.
That's right. Good job.
So we're gonna bring Robert back up, and we're gonna. You want to do it together?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we're gonna hit steps 10 and 11. We're gonna be done by 4:10. So that's 20.
We're gonna do this quick.
Yeah.
All right.
So page 84, everybody, for you guys that are following along in the big book.
Go ahead. All right. So 10 and 11. 10, 11, and 12, I guess, are kind of known as the maintenance steps. You know, to me, that's pretty surface level stuff. I mean, it is kind of. I feel like it is maintenance in a way. 87, I think. 84?
84.
So, we just went through this house cleaning. We began to have, like, Cynthia just read those promises. We were beginning to have a really profound experience with God, hopefully, for the first time after making all these amends. Character defects have been removed, right? I'm feeling a new sense of power and direction in my life, right? So things are changing, right? By this time, I'm being moved usually into working with others. At this point in my life, I was definitely... I knew things had changed. You know, I knew things were never going to go back to the way they were. I mean, I had that strong sense that I was done, you know. And I was, like the book says, we enter, it says, I'll just read this part, right? So it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Right? So, like it said, we've entered the world of the Spirit, man. So it's like this whole other, at this point, this whole other element really has come into my life, man. I like the promise that says, we're possessed by a new sense of power and direction. Mm-hmm. Right? To me, that's like what it is. To me, that's what it is to have entered the world of the Spirit. For 32 years, there was no power or direction in my life, and for the first time, it's like I'm intuitively knowing, how to handle situations. I'm intuitively knowing what the next step is, and then having the actual power to do it, right? And it's like, Teddy talked about knowing you're supposed to stop smoking and not being ready, right? It's like, I needed the power and I needed the direction. I needed to know what to do and have the power, right? So, kind of where I was at in my life, right? But there has to be something to kind of keep it going, right? There's not like a finish line, right? I have to continue to grow. So, and part of it is maintenance, right? I got to continue to clean house as new things come up. If I'm wrong, like it says, when wrong, promptly admit it, right? I'm probably not doing the crazy stuff I was doing before as far as like, probably some of the more glaring character defects like the manipulation and dishonesty and being dishonest about my motives with people and different stuff like that. A lot of that stuff's probably been removed. But I do still make mistakes. I do still, I snap at my wife. There's areas of selfishness, that that need to be inventoried and need to be looked at, because these things will start to build and drive a wedge between me and God. Going down here, it says, we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? So I was told, so what is that watching, right? So we're watching, right? That's a spiritual practice in itself, just to watch, right? So now I've entered the world of the Spirit. Now I'm watching, what am I watching? I'm watching myself. I'm watching my own thinking, right? Which is kind of a trip, right? I can watch my selfish thinking, and I can do this when I'm mindful enough, and I'm not like a 10 and 11 guru. I don't do this perfectly. There's a lot of, I'm not like an enlightened person or anything like that. When I remember to do these things, things go well, and then there's other times where I'm not remembering to do these things, and then I get reminded in other ways, right? That I need to get back on the beam, But yeah, it says we've entered the world of the Spirit, right? So now I'm beginning to watch. I can watch my thinking veer off into where I'm thinking of myself constantly, or veer into self-pity, right? And just by watching it, so what am I watching with, right? I'm actually watching with my spirit when you think about it, right? There's my thinking, and then I'm watching my thinking, right? So it's like this other element has entered. It's not just my mind, and there's a lot of people, spiritual authors, people that write about the ego and stuff like that, but this is in very plain language that you know, a new dimension has kind of entered in my life where I can actually watch, right? I'm watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? When these crop up, I ask God at once to remove them, right? So I'm not going to try to counter it with another thought or outthinking or, you know, try to, you know, I can drive myself crazy trying to figure out how to fix myself, right? Again, this really isn't about that, right? Once I catch myself veering off into selfishness, I ask God at once to remove it. It says, we discuss these with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed someone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. So those are a bunch of great practices, right? Love and tolerance of others is our code. If I'm really, you know, if I'm really on the beam, in my personal experience, if I'm really on the beam, like really being watchful, I'm not going to need to do all those things every time I have a selfish thought or every time I have a selfish action, right? Just by watching, I'm going to see myself veer off into it. And then, you know, it just kind of takes the energy out of it, right? Or maybe I turn to God and ask God to remove it, right? Or maybe sometimes I might get blindsided. My wife might come at me a little whatever, feel, you know, what I feel is disrespectful, and I might snap back, right? Well, what happened to watch, or what happened to turn, right? Went past all that, you know? So now I have to use those other practices. I have to discuss that with somebody, or I have to make amends if I find her, right? So you can see a lot of these practices are really continuances of the previous steps, right? There's, you know, we discuss it with somebody immediately. We discuss with somebody, right? That's the step five principle right there. Make amends, right? Resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Anyway, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, so back in step four where we're talking about writing inventory, by this time I've got a lot of experience at writing inventory. And when I get into steps 10 and 11, I become awake to some things about myself and how I look at inventory. And I don't. So step 10, you know, when I got here, I was first taught that it was about writing out steps. And I used to go to a 10-step meeting where they would put stuff up on the board and they would write it all out. But here it's not talking about writing, it's talking about watching. Watching is a basic spiritual practice, okay? Mindfulness is a basic spiritual practice where it's more of a proactive step than a reactive step. Because a lot of us react and then we go home and write inventory. This is about me watching for the behavior before it actually happens. You know, if I'm awake to some fear about myself when I get resentful, because the faces could change, but the fear could be the same. So, you know, and this is why I have to be awake to the fear that's inside of me. When you cross my path and step on my toes, if I'm awake to the fear that when it happens, I can turn out of that. And that's what it's talking about. Watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When I watch for it, I'm already awake to what it is. I can automatically go into what it's talking about. And just backing up real quick, it says, we entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Right? I don't get free room and board now that I'm over here in steps 10 and 11. Right? That's not what this is all about. This is about a continuous practice. And when I get into trouble... And when I get into trouble out in the world is when these practices slip away from me and dissipate, right? Because it says this should continue for a lifetime, not until I start to feel better, right? Because if I start to feel better, I tend to take time off of doing these practices, right? Because when my life gets good, I drift off into comfort land. See, I'm a comfort seeker by nature, right? And anything that feels good, I gravitate towards. Anything that doesn't feel good, I just kind of, it's like a vampire to daylight. I just turn away from it, right? You know? But the thing about this practice is I got to stay awake and I got to, spiritual mindfulness is a basic spiritual practice that I got to take into all my activities or I get myself into all kinds of trouble. And I end up having to go back and do all kinds of damage control and all kinds of other stuff because I create a lot of harm when I'm not watching. Now, Robert touched beautifully on the 10-step practices, so I want to kind of drift off because we talked about Cynthia talked about the 9-step promises, but there's also the 10-step promises. Now, I don't know about you, but I wasn't aware of the 10-step promises. What they read at the Alano Club and at other places was the 9-step promises. Those were the things that, those were like the big feature of the program. You know, but I didn't give a shit about any of those. What I cared about was what the 10-step promises talked about. It says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Now, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the only thing that I cared about was getting the monkey off my back. I didn't care about walking hand in hand with the Creator. I didn't care about all this other, you know, stuff that you were talking about. All I wanted to do was get free of the obsession to drink. Could that really happen for me? Well, what it says here, it says, we will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. You see, it's a miracle of God that I'm sitting here right now. See, I won't take a miracle of what God's done for me and turn that into a personal accomplishment. I'm not in charge of my sobriety today. I'm just sober. Okay? I'm not saying, hey, I stayed sober another day. Give me a high five. We have a home group where we don't clap at our meeting when somebody goes and picks up a chip. We're not celebrating the individual. God bestowed His infinite generosity on everybody in that group. If you're a real alcoholic and you're sober today, don't take credit for something that God's doing.
Right.
You know?
That's good.
You know? And that's my... And the question was asked, how do you come to this conception with God earlier? It was something around that area. I would say this. If you can't control stopping and you can't think your way into not starting, how the hell did you get a sobriety date? Mm-hmm. If you're completely powerless, how did that happen? Are you willing to consider that maybe a higher power has entered into your heart and into your life without your consent, without your permission, and without your prayers? Yeah. And that intervention was already done. You're here now. And it's by no mistake you're hearing these promises. Because there's way more than Alcoholics Anonymous than just staying sober. And I would suggest that I couldn't reconcile a higher power that would just get me sober and then leave me with untreated alcoholism. There's a whole lot more to get free of here, you guys. So, when it talks about it just comes, this is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. I invited people to my wedding that were drinking. There was a keg there, you know? I wasn't sitting there going, oh my God, I'm walking around on eggshells because these people are drinking over here. No, have a good time. Knock yourself out. I'm free of this. And if I can't come in here and tell you that, what kind of crappy program is this? We're not walking around in fear today, okay? We are free. This program's about getting free.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And if there's anything that I can say to you, I don't care who you are, how far down you've gone, and if you don't think it's in the cards for you, you do the process, report back to us, and then tell us what your experience is. But don't sit in the room and prejudge it until you've done it.
That's right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Let the fine print come into reality. When it translates into your bones, you're going to know what we're talking about. Each and every one of you have an opportunity here to make these promises come real. You know? So the 10-step promises are just as powerful as any other promises. So, anyways, go ahead.
Damn, that's good,
huh? Fire, yep. So, yeah, that's what this is about, man. No more triggers, right? No more triggers. They get removed from within. The book says I can go anywhere a free man can go. So going on, right? Should we just go to 11?
Yeah, go to 11 because we're running it. We're like down to 5 minutes.
Okay, so I'm going to turn the page to 86. So to me, I'll just say, you know, right, on 85 it says that to let up on the spiritual program of action, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, right? I'll say at this point in your life, like when you're at this point, things get so good. You know, for me, things got so good. I think the biggest character defect I'm up against at that point, and even up till right now, is complacency. Right? That's like the big one, man. Things get so good that on a daily basis, I can take God for granted. I can even forget that I'm an alcoholic in a way, you know? And, you know, how do I know when I'm in self-will if I'm not relying on God, right? It's like, I'm either relying on God or I'm relying on self. So, you know, it's really about keeping this thing going, man. Having an awakened heart and keeping that going, right? There's a lot of good lines in here. So anyway, prayer and meditation to me is about keeping that awakened heart, keeping that connection to God. You know, God doesn't need my prayers. I need that time. I need that time to connect with God. I need to strengthen that, you know, that connection through prayer and meditation. They don't really get into meditation a lot.
But, you know, meditation has been real, real big, you know, real big for me. I mean, it was almost impossible early on in the process, you know. But, man, the benefits, even, you know, even just starting out, just even if your mind is going the whole time, there's still benefits, you know. And there's lots of, you know, lots of different kinds of meditation, mindfulness, no mind, you know. There's Buddhist guided meditations online, you know what I mean. There's a lot of cool stuff you could try. I lost my page. So going on to step 10 and 11, or step 11 though. So it gives us some specific practices, right? So we have a nightly review, right? So it starts off with this nightly review. We retire at night. We constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves that should be discussed with another person at once? So every night I'm going to take a little bit, you know, a little bit of quiet time, and this doesn't have to be written or anything like that, but I want to review my day, maybe go through from beginning to end and just look at, you know, just like it says, where was I selfish, right? Was I, you know, on my phone a lot at work? You know, did I drink a whole bunch of caffeine way too much, you know, whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. Social media, whatever. Was I dishonest? You know, I look at dishonest as our commitments too. Am I, you know, my commitments to my wife, to my work, you know, those kind of things. Was I afraid? You know, was I afraid? A lot of times, for me, it's a fear of being not good enough. I know I'm in fear of that when I'm getting judgy, right? If I start getting judgmental of other people, that's, if I'm watching my thoughts and I see myself getting judgmental, I know that there's a little bit of a fear of being not good enough. Mm-hmm. Right? I'll ask God to remove that fear, and boom, no more judgment. Right? So was I sitting in judgment a lot of people? Was I in fear? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? You know, a lot of times some of these selfish behaviors will end up on there, you know, day after day after day, right? And the same on these reviews, right? So maybe now it's time to fifth step this, right? For me, it's like, if I have fear has a stronghold or a certain selfish behavior, right? I might need a little extra power, so I might need to fifth step that to somebody. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, what we could pack into the stream of life? We must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making a review, we ask God's forgiveness, and then we inquire as to what corrective measures should be taken. Right? Maybe it's that I'm skipping on 10 and 11. Maybe I need to get up earlier and spend more time with God. Right? Maybe I need to be more watchful. Maybe I need to, if I was shunning somebody at work or being kind of rude, maybe I need to go out of my way to do something for that person. You know, maybe I need to be more considerate and supportive of my wife and help with the kids more, you know. It could be a number of different things, right? Then it goes into upon awakening, right? So I do this review, and then I take these things, these corrective measures, into prayer the next day, right? These are the things that I take to God the next day. So it's really about growth, right? It's not just about maintaining. It's about growing, continuing to grow day by day. Okay?
I think we've ran out of time, so. Right. Huh?
410,
exactly. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and do step 12. So we'll come back in 10 minutes.
No, five minutes.
5 minutes. 5 minutes. Okay.